Louisiana Eats is brought to you with major support from Zatarain's, a New Orleans tradition since 1889. WWNO New Orleans and our studios in the Southern Food and Beverage Museum, this is Louisiana Eats. I'm Poppy Tooker. Time sure flies when you're having fun. It's hard to believe that it's been a whole year since we moved our Louisiana Eats studios into the Southern Food and Beverage Museum. So it's long overdue that we meet the neighbors. On this week's Louisiana Eats, we're taking you on a walking tour of our neighborhood to introduce you to some very special people who are doing wonderful work reclaiming a neighborhood that was once almost a ghost town. And here's a news flash. All the neighbors we're visiting with are involved in food-related businesses. The first responders in Central City were the folks at Cafe Reconcile, where they've been serving good food and doing good deeds for 16 years. Then, we visit with the new kids on the block at the Good Work Network's latest project, Rue Carré. And we'll give you a sneak preview of the Dryad's Public Market, a business that's a real game changer for the neighborhood. So come along as we meet the neighbors on this week's Louisiana Eats. Since we set up our recording studio in the Southern Food and Beverage Museum a year ago, the place has come to feel like a home away from home. Just outside our studio's door, SoFab's kitchen is often filled with our dear friends hard at work on their computers or cooking up something delicious on the stove. Every now and then, we have to ask Jill Benson to keep it down when she's washing pots and pans, but otherwise, it's been a marvelous year. Of course, the move wouldn't have been possible if it hadn't been for SoFab's intrepid director, Liz Williams, who actually gave up her office space so we could have our studio here. We asked Liz to join us to reflect back on a year of fantastic exhibits at the museum and to hear about what exciting expansions are on the horizon at SoFab.
Well, I think the most exciting exhibit that we've had during the past year is the Modernist Cuisine Photography exhibit, which was Nathan Meerfeld's attempt to make his photographs really accessible to everyone. And it's been a really wonderful exhibit. I think it's put us on the map in a lot of ways because it was a national traveling exhibit. It really meant that we were on the par with other museums that are much older, much more established than we have been. And that's very exciting to be recognized that way.
You've got some pretty exciting news about what has happened in the last year with the Southern Food and Beverage Museum and the outreaching parts of it. So get us up to date with what's going on.
Well, we had been the SoFab Institute, and it was a little bit confusing for people because they kept thinking that we were Southern, even though our reach has really expanded beyond the South now, and we're really national. So we have changed our name again, and we are now the National Food and Beverage Foundation.
So what's going on in the other parts of the country?
Well, we are working right now in Los Angeles to establish another regional museum there. But already we have a whiskey gallery at Seven Grand, a wonderful bar in Los Angeles. And we are having many, many programs out there. And so we're definitely making ourselves known in Los Angeles.
Well, another thing that I'm really excited about is someplace where we have never taken our Louisiana Eats listeners. Can we go across the street and visit the library?
That would be great. I'd love to take you there.
Let's go. So Liz, now we've crossed the street and we're just about a block further down Aretha Castle Haley. And here we are at the John and Bonnie Boyd Hospitality and Culinary Library. Let's go in.
Okay, let's do that.
Wow, what have you got here, Liz?
Well, the most recent gift, which is absolutely wonderful, is a signed autographed copy of Lena Richards' self-published cookbook, the one that was the precursor to the one that Houghton Mifflin published. And Clementine Hunter put her hands on that book and sent it to her publisher, and that's how it was published nationally. But this one has her photograph in it, which was left out of the nationally published book.
And for those who might not know who Lena Richard was, and goodness knows I'm one of her biggest fans, explain who she was.
Well, she was really a modern-day Martha Stewart in terms of marketing and all of that sort of thing. She had her own restaurant. She taught cooking lessons. She was hired by the Rockefellers to put together the menu at and the recipes for Travis House in Williamsburg. And she had her own cooking show on WDSU twice a week. It was broadcast live in 1949 and into 1950. And her picture and people learned how to cook from Lena Richard.
And I have to point this out. One of the most amazing things to me is that she is an African-American woman.
That's right, she was. And of course, that is remarkable that the television show was named after her. And she was appeared as an expert twice a week in everyone's living room.
Right then, during the Jim Crow era.
That's right.
I hear you've got some magical things from Paul Prudhomme.
That's right, we do. When Paul Prudhomme died, his family donated his cookbook collection to us, which was over 600 cookbooks, often inscribed to him, and we have the collection all together here for people to see.
So to be clear, this is not a Southern cookbook collection. It's an everything collection.
That's right. It is an everything collection. We are the only standalone culinary library in the country, and we have the New Orleans Public Library check that out so that we were telling people the truth when we said it. And it's also great, for example, if you want to see how nutrition was discussed in 1870 or something like that, you can come here and look at nutrition books. And it's not just reading about, oh, in 1870 people thought this. You can actually read the books that were written in 1870 and see what people thought.
If you come to the library, how does one go about perusing or looking for a specific thing?
Well, if you know what you're looking for, you can go online to the New Orleans Public Library's catalog, and you can put the name of the book in or look by author, and it'll tell you if the book is at SOFAB. We are the official culinary branch of the New Orleans Public Library, and so that's why our books are cataloged in their system. Another thing that's really important about the library is that we have one of the largest collections of community cookbooks that you'll find. And so many libraries don't want community cookbooks because they don't sit well on shelves and the binding is so tenuous that it comes apart easily. But I think that they are such a snapshot of time and place that they're really, really important. And the concept was invented in America. And right after the Civil War, women who were trying to help raise money for people who were handicapped and whatever by the war began to publish these community cookbooks. And so it's a very American sort of raise your own money kind of ideas. And so I think that it's important that we have them.
Congratulations again, and thank you, Liz.
Looking forward to another year.
Liz Williams, president of the National Food and Beverage Foundation. Thank you. Long before Aretha Castle Haley became home to the burgeoning businesses and groups that now grace the boulevard, Cafe Reconcile pioneered a culinary and life skills training program for young New Orleanians. We walked down the block to visit with the man who's been at the forefront of this community movement for over a decade, Chef Joe Smith. Chef Joe recalled the many transformations he's observed, both in the cafe and outside its doors.
When I started 13 years ago, for real, I actually was only supposed to be here for 2 weeks. I'm a recovering addict alcoholic, which I have no problem telling anybody. I'm very proud of being a recovering addict alcoholic. And I was in the treatment center at the time, and I came to help for 2 weeks. I didn't really have a passion for cooking anymore. I wasn't coming back into this industry. But my counselor sent me over here to help them out for 2 weeks, and within a week, that passion flowed back in. You know, they had 3 or 4 students at the time, and I was like, God, why are you doing this to me? You're going to show me something like this, this beautiful, and only going to let me see it for 2 weeks. And here we are 13 years later, and God still has me doing what he's anointed me to do. You know, when you find your purpose in life, there's nothing more satisfying. Here at Cafe Reconcile, our mission is to help young people to change their lives for the better, to take them out of situations that they're in and move them into a positive road towards success. You know, I tell people I care less if they get a job. I want them focused on a career. You know, a young person can come through this program and get a job and be working and not satisfied. I want them to find a career that's going to satisfy them. You know, we're here not only for the community, but for the city and for anybody that we can help.
Tell me about the training program. What is required for somebody to get into the training program here? And how long does it last?
Okay, the requirements are 17 to 24. You don't have to be a high school graduate. If you're not a high school graduate, we have a GED portion of the training that we do. And we don't want you to leave high school to come here. We want you to finish high school. You know, so that's why I train from 17 to 24. But it's for at-risk youths, those who may not be academically inclined, got put out of school. You know, it doesn't matter if you have a rocky background, whatever the reason is that you're not doing something positive in that age range, we want you to come and put an application in. You know, because the process is just like going to get a job. You know, we do the application, we do the interviews, and we have a committee that selects for classes. But and the program itself is 11 weeks long. You know, we do 4 weeks of foundational skills, which are life skills. And we do 4 weeks in-house cafe training, you know, where they do two weeks in the front, 2 weeks in the back. And then they go out on a 3-week internship. And we got some of the best partners in this city, the Emerald Group, the Brennan's Group, the Best Group, the Hilton, you know, Le Pavillon, all these different hotels and stuff are our partners through this internship. What I tell people, it's called the internship, but what it actually is, our young people get an opportunity to get a 3-week interview. Because if we go for a job, you know, we may sit down with somebody for a half an hour, 45 minutes, and as chefs, you know, they say, well, come and do a stage, you know, maybe for a day, kind of show me what you can do, and then they decide from there. But with our young people, they get 3 weeks to say, this is why you should keep me. This is why I'm worth the time and effort. That's the basis of our training. Because when we first started, we did the skills thing, and that's all we concentrated on, skills. So we had people that had pretty good knife skills when they went out there and all that good stuff, and they knew how to read recipes, but they weren't able to keep jobs. Because I don't care how good you are at something, if your attitude and behavior is not in line, then it does me no good. Because you cannot run a kitchen or any business by yourself. So we need people that's going to understand that I have to have a proper attitude, a proper behavior. You know, so in life skills, they learn code switching, they learn their hot buttons, they learn, you know, how to de-escalate situations. And I say the biggest part of what the challenges that we have here is challenging our young people's belief system. And when we talk about belief system, we're not talking about their religious beliefs. I'm talking about their core belief system, what guides their moral compass. You know, and I tell people, it's real simple. When you go into the workplace, I want the person who hires you to be able to trust you as much as I trust you.
When you look back over all of these years, you know, you all got this rolling 16 years ago. There are a lot of different programs that have started up that are doing similar kind of work, but you all were really the first responders.
You know, and not only that, two of the ones that have started up that does exactly what we do on the same kind of basis in the hospitality industry were all started by people that were already connected with Cafe Reconcile. So they're like our sister places. They're just in different parts of the city. When I first started here at Cafe Reconcile, this whole corridor was abandoned. It was Cafe Reconcile, Ashe, Living Witness, Gloryland Church, Dry Street YMCA, and the Mission, basically. That was like the only thing on this corridor. And one of the things that we're getting back to is being more part of the community, because back then we were like in the forefront of bringing the community together, being part of people coming into the community. And 2012, when we did our renovation, it's like we went to thinking about, oh, we got this beautiful building now, we've arrived, we this, that, and the other. We can just concentrate on business. And it's like we let everybody else, you know, that was coming in be out in front of the community. And we just sat back and was doing what we're doing, and that's not what we're here for, you know? And so we've made a conscious decision here at Cafe Reconcile to get back to Cafe Reconcile's mission. You know, we started allowing our process to be more about ambition and building a brand for business than we were about the mission of Cafe Reconcile. People would always say, something's changed. I used to get this, but it's just really, it kind of tastes the same, but it's not exactly the same. And I said, oh, I can tell you what it is. The cooks are not passionate in allowing their passion to come through because they're so focused on, we got to make money, we got to watch this, we got to watch that. And that's not how I like my cooks to be. It shows in your cooking. You had the old saying, when a cook made something that was real, real good, oh, he stuck his foot in that. That's right. He put a part of him in that,
yes,
you know? And that's what I love, people that come to Cafe Reconcile, to have that feeling with every meal that they have. You know, I want them when they're eating, not only to be happy, but to feel the joy in the place. And I want our young people who's in our training program to feel that joy and that love. I want them to understand that we want their self-esteem to rise. You know, we want their self-worth to rise. And if there's no joy, that stuff doesn't get to rise. You know, because it does nothing so wonderful than a young person to hear one of the patrons say, oh, that was so good. I enjoyed that so much. And me to turn and say, well, so-and-so over here, you know, accomplished that. And that's why I always try to keep our recipes nice and simple so that young people who really doesn't have that much experience could accomplish them, you know, and be able to hear that feedback. Because once you get them to start feeling good about something that they've done, they want to do more of it. They want to feel more of it. So it makes them want to strive to do better. You know, so it's all about accomplishments when we're training. I tell people, we're not just a part of the O.C. Haley community or the Central City community. Cafe Reconcile is a part of the training, job training community. We're part of the nonprofit community, you know, and we need to reach out more to those different nonprofits and other entities that are trying to do something to help raise up our city, to make it a place where young people, no matter what their circumstances are, has an opportunity. You know, and we want to get to the point where hopefully in the near future, we're going to start doing once a week or once a month, pay whatever you can day, you know, making sure that we even stay at a price level that our average community person can come in and have a meal and not have to worry about, can I really afford this?
Would you take us back to 13 years ago when you were first here? Has the customer base changed?
The customer base has changed some. The demographic of the customer base has changed because when I first started here, it was a lot of the community, you know, but now we've started to get people from the CBD and all across the city. They're coming from everywhere. And I tell people, you know, when it's their first time here or people that I talk to that has never been here, people will come the first time to support your mission, but they keep coming because the experience that they got was worth the travel. You know, not just the good food, not just the good service, but also the beautiful young people that they get to meet. You know, I tell people it's not always about making donations. Granted, we need donations, we need grants and stuff, but we also need patrons to become regular patrons to come in and have lunch. That's the biggest support our young people can get, is to start seeing those regular faces. You know, that raises a young person's self-esteem and self-worth up so high. And, you know, then when by the time they leave here believing, I can accomplish anything.
Chef Joe Smith of Cafe Reconcile. When we come back from a short break, we cross the street to grab some lunch at the newest business on the boulevard, the Rue Carré. Stay tuned. Poppy Tooker, and you're listening to Louisiana Eats, edible content for Louisiana food lovers. Louisiana Eats is brought to you with major support from Rouse's Markets and from the Ralph Brennan Restaurant Group. The newest venture on Aretha Castle Haley Boulevard is Rue Carré, a project of the Good Work Network, an organization that assists in developing minority and women-owned businesses in southeast Louisiana. Rue Carré is currently home to five small food vendors, all with different takes on cuisine, emphasizing African-American, Latin, and Caribbean cooking styles. Before sitting down for lunch, we decided to stop in and visit with each vendor to learn how they got started and what's on the menu.
Hi, I'm Brandon Blackwell. My wife Jennifer and I are the owners of Splendid Pig here at the Rue Carré, and we're also the owners of Elysian Seafood at the St. Rock Market.
Tell us a little bit about what you serve here at the Splendid Pig.
Well, it's mostly pig. So we try and showcase different parts of the animal in different ways. So we put bacon on our fresh Louisiana strawberry salad, or we'll take the shoulder and braise it down with lemongrass and sambal and aged soy sauce. And, you know, we make a noodle dish out of that. We do a slow-cooked cochon de lait po' boy. But, you know, we also do some brownies and some other things that aren't necessarily pork-related.
Well, it's all yummy. I can attest to that. So tell us a little bit from your point of view about your Rue Carré experience.
We started back in 2013 as a pop-up restaurant. So we were working out of other people's spaces. And when we heard about the Rue Carré project, we thought that would be an opportunity for us to potentially have our own space, you know, a space here temporarily to bring our food to more people, especially the people of this community, and to, you know, build a following and to build our brand, and then eventually to maybe move out into our own space. Here at the Rue Carré, it's a bit different than it was for the pop-up. For the pop-up, we got a lot of support from friends and family, people in the uptown neighborhood, which is mostly where we were. But here we're seeing a much more mixed group. Lots of people from the neighborhood, which is awesome. And then people that have heard about us through Eater or some of the other, you know, Times Picayune, some of the other press that we've gotten, and just, you know, are super interested in food and just want to come check a place like this out.
Well, I am so glad we had this chance to visit with you. And I hope everybody who loves the pig, like I love the pig, will come and visit you here at Rue Carré.
Thanks, Poppy. I appreciate it.
My name is Hilton Campbell. I'm a manager, part owner here at Johnny's Jamaica Grill at the Rue Carré as an extension. Here we do jerk chicken, curry chicken, rice and peas, greens, plantains. We also do oxtail and curry goat as a special on the week. On the weekends, we also do fish and shrimp to order. So, fish and shrimp, you don't want to have that, sitting for a while. So we always do that fresh to order once it comes in and stuff. So you come in, you get it fresh to go. This is our jerk chicken. Good herbs and seasoning and spices on it to give it that consistent, to give it that taste.
Oh, I can attest to how delicious it is.
Yes,
I'll confess. I've been thinking about it since the last time I had some here.
Well, we got plenty here to serve you and anybody else who wants to come to the Rue Carré and to Johnny's. We have a lot.
So where were you all located before you came to Rue Carré?
We had a food truck and it was mobile, so it's just wherever we are that day. So we made sure we had the Facebook page and the Instagram, so wherever we at, we could put it out. But we're primarily at Esplanade and Frenchman, right across from the Dragon Den. It's right close to the U.S. Mint. Mm-hmm. So people would always come once we're there. And when we're not out, they call the number, where you guys at? You're not coming out tonight. So we always try to be out. So that's where we were prior to this. That's what started, Johnny's Jamaica Grill.
So what's the reception been to your business here at the Rue Carré?
It has been very great. It has been really good. On Yelp so far, we had 5 stars. On Facebook, we have 4.9 stars. So that tells us that the reception is great. Also, we have a lot of return customers, which is indicative of a business that's going in the right direction.
Good afternoon, ma'am. Welcome to Johnny's Jamaica Grill. How may I be of service today?
I think I'll have a jerk chicken.
Jerk chicken? Sure thing.
And the mango carrot.
And the mango carrot. Well, that's 11 plus.
Yes, sir.
All right. That'll be 14. You're paying cash or card?
There you go.
Yeah. How's your day going, ma'am?
For us, it's not just so much about the food. We try to make sure that we have good, or even great, excellent customer service. We try to remember small things about our customers. We try to, always engage them. So someone's waiting on the food, we engage them in a conversation to find out just a little bit more. So it's not just about great food. Miss Dana, you wanted that spice in your mouth?
Maybe. Can I have a little roast?
And do you need curry gravy in your rice?
Yes.
All right.
I am from Mandeville, Jamaica. Now they have a Mandeville here, but they also have a Mandeville in Jamaica. It's in central Jamaica parish that they call Manchester. Born and raised there, then I came here for scholarship. Once I got my degree, I kind of wanted, I like the degree that I have, but I don't love it. I didn't want to work in the field, so.
What was that degree?
It was MGIS, Management Information System Programming. So I used the managerial part of it to be a manager here. Rest of it, programming, didn't really want to get into that, even though it's relatively lucrative, but. My passion was cooking. And in our culture, you learn to cook from a young age and you learn to use different seasonings and spices. And when I was in college, I cooked a lot. My house was the open house. I was also a resident assistant, so I had an apartment for myself. So all my friends would come over to my apartment, we would cook and they'll eat and we'll sit and laugh. So I think that tied into me being able to cook the way I do right now. And then Johnny's a good cook and VJ plus Greg as well. So when you have 3 or 4 people who could do what they do great or even good, then it makes for a great ingredient for our restaurant business.
Well, congratulations. Oh, and I wish
thanks
you all the success in the world.
Yeah, much appreciated, and we'll definitely aim for that. Thanks a lot. We appreciate you guys coming to see us.
Rodriguez, the pupusa lady. I love you.
My name is Orestes, and I'm her husband, and we always work together since we opened up, and I've been in the business for a long time, and so is my wife. Pupusa originates in Salvador, okay, and it's very popular in all Central America. It's a little over 6 inches. It's made out of cornmeal and cabbage, fresh cabbage over the top. This pupusa, the golden one, is made with crawfish. Okay, we started doing that. It's something nobody had done. And we started doing that for Mardi Gras. And now we kept it on because everybody liked it so much. The other one is mixta, which has bean, pork, and cheese. And the other one, medium, what is it?
La frijolera.
Loroco. Loroco is a plant like a romaine. And the texture is like broccoli. And it's been said that it's good for your digestion. Pupusa is something that you learn from tradition and from generation to generation. My wife is next to Salvador in Honduras. Her sisters also know how to make the pupusas, and they come in from time to time and help us. It was originated in Salvador, but it's really all over that area. And there's nothing that they'll teach you in school. Okay?
Yeah.
It's done by hand to the moment and warm up. That's why we ask for 4 or 5 minutes. Everything is done in the house. Everything is done here. Even our sauces. We also have a Maya fried chicken with a recipe from Honduras, which people love it. It's made with green bananas, and the chicken is marinated for 24 hours on a lot of garlic and lemon, salt, and pepper. We also do quesadillas, fresh to the order, and we also do ceviches. I go get the seafood in the morning.
And before you all were here at the Rue Carré, where did you operate your business?
We never had our own business. This is the first time, Grace Scott. My wife worked for 12 years with Adolfo at La Boca. She was she had a small write-up on the paper back in the day, and she was doing the ceviches over there. She was also in charge of the dessert and appetizers, and she's been well-known, and people still look for her today for her ceviches on the table.
What has your experience been at Rue Carré? Who are your customers, and how are people reacting to your food?
Well, some of them I explain what it is, but everybody's been acting very pleased with the product. And we already know some people, they come in and they say, Miriam or Orestes, you know, give us what you have today. You know, for instance, we do different pupusas all the time. What do I mean? Right now, we just came in with another one that's called Revuelta. It's made with pork and cheese. We're always doing something different. We have a lot to bring to the table.
My name is Estralita Sonia, and I'm the owner of Estralita's Cafe Carryout in Westwego, and also now a new location here in the Rue Carré Food Court.
You already have a bricks and mortar business, so what made you cross the bridge and come over to Rue Carré?
Because it gave me the opportunity for the people in the city to taste my fine food that I've been cooking now for over 25 years. It's time to spread it.
And what are the kind of things that people can find here at Estralita's?
In the Rue Carré Food Court, we serve a small version of what we have on the West Bank. So we have our red beans and rice with sausage. We also do vegan beans in the Rue Carré. We have seafood gumbo, the famous po' boy sandwiches with the patents, hot sausage patties that's well known in New Orleans. We have shrimp po' boys. We have catfish that everybody eats. And we do other items that's pertaining to our outside venue, such as the nachos with the chili and cheese. Sometimes we offer hot dogs. We have hamburgers, things that you would eat, you know, if you were outside dining. And also, there are times when I do specialty items, and I also serve them in the court, such as the crawfish etouffee, shrimp stew over rice, barbecue ribs. So we're trying to just bring the flavor of the West Bank into the city so that people can know what our food tastes like.
Well, the truth is, if anybody's looking for some good, authentic Creole cooking, Estralita's is the place to find it. I have very fond memories of your potato salad.
Yes, thank you, Poppy. Thank you. Yes, and that is our basis. It's Cajun Creole cooking, Louisiana style. We love what we do, and we do what we love.
So, Estralita, how have you been received here into the neighborhood? Who are your customers, and how's your experience been so far?
I think it's been really good. And in fact, when I first started about the venture and coming to New Orleans, I was kind of leery about it because I've been over in the suburbs for so long. But meeting the people in the neighborhood and getting to know the business people in the area, it's been a wonderful experience. And I'm really glad that I'm part of the Rucaray Food Court.
Well, I'm glad you're on this side of the river, too.
Thank
selfishly.
You,
thank you, Esmeralda.
Thank you so much.
What a pleasure to see you, and best of luck here with your new effort.
Thank you, Poppy, so much.
While we finished our delicious meals, Phyllis Egan Cassidy, Executive Director of the Good Work Network, joined us at our table to tell us a little more about the Rucaray Project.
I'm Phyllis Cassidy. I'm the Founder and Executive Director of Good Work Network, and Good Work Network is the owner of Rucaray.
Phyllis, please explain what the Good Work Network is.
Good Work Network is a micro-enterprise development organization. We work with very small businesses to help them start, grow, and succeed. We provide primarily training and one-on-one counseling and market access, so creating market opportunities for these small businesses.
What was the process that the vendors had to go through to apply to be here, and what are the benefits for a vendor here?
So we created a selection committee that included some notable restaurateurs in the city who were just amazing. We had something like 67 applications. They were weeded down to about 10. We sampled the food. They made a presentation to the committee. But we were very intentional that this be a diverse vendor group. You know, we're also looking for folks who didn't have the capital to start their own restaurant. So, you know, we were looking for, you know, good people who cooked well, but just didn't have that kind of wealth that takes to start a restaurant. So the benefits are, we built this, the kitchen that they all use, the pods, it's all been equipped by us, by our funders, not us, and their rent for the first year is 10% of gross revenues. So they don't have fixed costs that will sink them, you know, so as they go, their rent goes, and so, you know, we try to do some advertising on their benefit. We will have performances here, which would draw more crowds. We hope everybody who's here opens up their own standalone restaurant and then makes room for the next generation of emerging food entrepreneurs. So we will do everything possible to make them successful, move on. But we also know that there's a deep bench of talented food entrepreneurs in the city of New Orleans. So we really feel like we have the ability. We know we have waiting lists already for vendors who want to come in.
One of the great things about being a vendor here is that you don't have to build out some huge expensive commercial kitchen. Explain how the communal kitchen works.
So the food preparation is done in the commercial kitchen that meets all city codes for commercial kitchens. The food is then brought to the pods. And for example, you're eating pupusas. They're made and prepared here, brought to the pod, and there's a tabletop skillet where they're finished and served. The couchon de lait poor boy, all of that base is done in the kitchen and then brought out in warming trays to be served. So it has that feel of kind of a modular marketplace, open courtyard. We have a stage here where we can have performances. It's really a community gathering place as much as it is a restaurant. You know, it's a place where we can have line dancing and Caribbean night and networking events. And, you know, so it's more than just a food venue. It's really something that we hope it is part of this community, part of the larger community, and really provides us a different kind of space that we don't have many of in this city. It's something that seems to appeal to lots of different folks.
Oh, well, it seems to me that this would appeal to almost anybody's taste buds because there's something delicious for everybody here.
For sure.
Phyllis, thank you so much. Welcome to the neighborhood, and let's stay in touch. I can't wait to see what there's going to be here to eat next at Rucaray.
That's Phyllis Egan Cassidy and the many vendors of the Rue Carree on Aretha Castle Haley. Who was Aretha Castle Haley? And why was Dryad Street renamed in her honor in the 1980s? Stay tuned, and we'll explore that topic when we come right back. I'm Poppy Tooker, and you're listening to Louisiana Eats, edible content for Louisiana food lovers. Louisiana Eats is brought to you with major support from Popeye's Louisiana Kitchen and Zatarain's. Here's this week's culinary quiz question, brought to you with support from Popeye's Louisiana Culinary Institute. Who was Aretha Castle Haley, and why was Dryad Street renamed in her honor in the 1980s? To answer that question, we need to go back in time a couple of hundred years. Central City, which was once known as the Dryad Street Commercial District, was originally laid out by French architect and engineer Bartholomé Lafon in 1809. The first anchor of the neighborhood was the Dryad's Market, established in 1849 as part of the city's public market system. The site of the original Dryad's Market is now home to the Southern Food and Beverage Museum, the place Louisiana Eats calls home. Then, in the late 19th and early 20th centuries, Jewish and Italian merchants, African-American doctors and insurance companies, dairymen like Brown's Dairy, and German bakers like Leidenheimer's all set up shop there, taking advantage of the entrepreneurial opportunities available to anyone with the ideas and the energy to become a success. By 1923, the neighborhood was so densely populated with businesses that it was served by five streetcar lines. During the Jim Crow era, it became the neighborhood where many black musicians called home. Cultural figures like Buddy Bolden and Professor Longhair frequented the storied Dewdrop Inn. Central City also gave birth to the modern civil rights movement in New Orleans and the Southern Christian Leadership Conference during the turbulent 1960s. In the late 1980s, the corridor was renamed posthumously for Aretha Castle Haley. She was a civil rights pioneer who, as a young college student, joined the 1960 boycott of stores on Dryad Street that wouldn't hire black sales clerks or cashiers, in spite of the fact that the majority of customers in the shopping district were black. Mrs. Haley was the president of the New Orleans chapter of CORE, the Congress of Racial Equality, and dedicated her life to social justice issues, including education and health care. Now, here's a little-known fact about Mrs. Haley. Her mother was Virgie Castle, who ran Leah Chase's bar at Dookie Chase Restaurant for years, proving that once again in New Orleans, we all have barely one degree of separation. I'm Poppy Tooker, and we're proud to call Aretha Castle Haley Boulevard our Louisiana Eats home. For the last stop on our neighborhood walking tour, we thought we'd visit a place that promises to positively transform the neighborhood, the Dryad's Public Market. Plagued by various development problems over the past years, the market is now expanding its hours, vendors, and services since Chef Dan Essies took the reins. We join Dan inside the enormous hall as community members, vendors, and construction workers busily milled about.
My name is Daniel Essis. I'm CEO and president of Dryad's Public Market. So we can start years ago with the whole concept of the Jack and Jake's Market, where it was going to be a market, a wholesale produce company, trying to reach schools as well to try to give them local healthy food. So the two of them met up, they built the market, and then kind of ran into some trouble for one reason or another. You know, it was a lot of financial problems, personalities, whatever. I was brought in to kind of rectify what was happening. And we changed the name to Dryads Public Market because we obviously wanted a fresh beginning. But we loved the street, and we loved the history that was on the street for many, many years. And we wanted to be able to bring local food, artisanal food, healthy food to Central City. That's our goal, and that's our mandate as well. So you walk in the doors from the parking lot, and you're staring at our meat case with all natural local pork chops, some cuts of beef, some chicken, some quail, and a ton of awesome sausages that our butcher Leanne Smith is going to make. To your right, you're going to see some fresh pasta being made by SS Foods, and you're also going to be able to kind of choose your own pasta bowl. Turn the corner, and you're going to see these amazing cakes and pies from our baker. And you'll see some other things, too, like cake decorating. So if you have birthday cake and you want Pac-Man on there or you want the Teenage Ninja Turtles, we're going to have that also. So you're going to see that. And then to the corner of your eye, you're going to see the wine room. We're going to have wine to take home, wine to drink on premise, local spirits. So we're going to use and highlight some of that. So after you look at the pastries, you're going to see our coffee bar. And to the left, you see our seafood department as well. So we're going to have local shrimp, local crab. You can have whole fish butchered for you and broke them down. We'll also have some things like salmon in season, Gulf tuna, maybe some tilapia. It's popular with a lot of people. And then in the center of the store are our bars. So you go to the bar, and right across from the bar is our oyster bar, done by Curious Oyster. And, you know, you turn around and there's just going to be a huge section of prepared foods.
And I think that's an important thing for people to understand, too, is that aside from being a public market where you can come and make your groceries, you can also not worry about making the groceries and just eat it right here.
Exactly. And the best part of that is that we're going to be using all of the ingredients that we use in the store, in the market, is going to be things that we break down and that we make here also. So like our butcher makes the andouille, well, that's going to go into our gumbo. And this way we can kind of keep the price down because we're processing it from start to finish. And then the pièce de résistance for us is our local and organic and conventional produce section.
So what are the hours and days here?
We're open 6 days a week, close on Sunday, Monday through Thursday, 8 to 8, and Friday through Saturday, 8 to 10.
Well, that couldn't be any more convenient. So don't worry, you've got a new regular customer, and I'll be seeing you again soon, Dan.
Awesome, thank you, appreciate that.
Oh, who are the people in your neighborhood? In your neighborhood, in your neighborhood. Say, who are the people in your neighborhood?
That's it for this week's edition of Louisiana Eats, edible content for Louisiana food lovers. Join us next week when we explore a Confederacy of Dunces from a food angle to celebrate the 35th anniversary of John Kennedy Toole's posthumously awarded Pulitzer Prize.
I am at the moment writing a lengthy indictment against our century. When my brain begins to reel from my literary labors, I make an occasional cheese dip.
Subscribe to our podcast, hear today's show, or catch up on previous editions anytime online at itsneworleans.com. Louisiana Eats is made possible with major support from Popeye's Louisiana Kitchen, Rouse's Markets, and Zatarain's. Additional support for Louisiana Eats is provided by the Shreveport-Bossier Convention and Tourist Bureau and by Tableau, Dickie Brennan's latest restaurant serving local Creole cuisine with a view of Jackson Square. Original theme music by Johnny Sketch and the Dirty Notes. Big thanks to producers Joe Schreiner and Sarah Holtz. Come visit us anytime in our Louisiana Eats studios at the Southern Food and Beverage Museum. I'm Poppy Tooker.
Louisiana Eats is a production of WWNO and the University of New Orleans.